Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Voter Protection Program press briefing. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have an opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call may be recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Norm Eisen, outside counsel to VPP. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone, and Happy New Year. It promises to be an eventful one. We want to thank you for joining us today to talk about all of that. In our latest press briefing from the Voter Protection Program, where I serve as outside counsel, as a reminder, we are a nonpartisan organization that works to protect the integrity of our elections and to ensure that the will of the voters, as expressed at the ballot box, is respected. We have with us today Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser, Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call, Arizona Secretary of State Katie Hobbs, former New Jersey Governor and VPP Bipartisan Advisory Board member Christine Todd Whitman, and I to discuss what to expect on Wednesday when the Senate and the House meet in a joint session to officially count the Electoral College votes. As a reminder, the votes to select electors in each state were cast on November 3rd, then all the governors ascertained those electoral slates prior to December 8th. The Electoral College met on December 14th, and President-elect Biden won the Electoral College 306 to 232. Despite attempts by President Trump and his allies, and we're going to talk about the latest and perhaps the most notorious of those attempts, Saturday's call to Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger. Despite those attempts to overturn the will of the American voters, that is not going to happen. Congress will not change a single state's Electoral College slate, as we explain in detail in the VPP's new guide to the counting of electoral votes and the January 6th meeting of Congress, which all of you should have in the emails we've sent you to invite you to this call. There is a link. Let us know if you need one. By now, everyone has heard the actual recording of President Trump's call to Georgia, to Secretary Raffensperger. You'll hear from Secretary Hobbs, a colleague of Secretary Raffensperger, a perspective on how that call sounds to a Secretary of State, and you'll hear from our AGs. And from Governor Whitman about the legalities of such a call. But make no mistake, the call is the latest profound attack on our democracy. It may be the most aggressive and the most desperate yet, and in my view, it raises serious issues of criminal liability for the president. But what the so-called objectors in Congress are planning on Wednesday, as you'll read in our guide, is actually no less insulting or offensive to the laws, the precedents, to our democracy, and ultimately to the American voters than what we heard from Trump on that call. And we'll talk about that a little bit as well, and explain why those objections are doomed to fail. While there have been a few cases of challenged electoral vote slates in the past, never before has anyone based objections on theories as thoroughly debunked and defeated in scores of the over 60 court cases that we have had here. Not even close. Nothing has ever come anywhere near the sheer illegitimacy and illegality of the effort that is going to be mounted in Congress. Towards the end of the call, I'll share a little more from our guide about why that is so, what to expect on Wednesday, and some of the precedent. But for now, I'm going to hand things over to our speakers, starting with Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser. General?
Thanks, Norm. My name is Phil Weiser. I have the honor of serving as Colorado's Attorney General, and we are at a difficult moment in our nation's history. The idea that Congress and the Vice President's role is anything more than counting the votes that have already been certified is an affront to the rule of law. It's a threat to our democratic republic. Under the Electoral Count Act, the law that specifies how this procedure works, it's very clear. Once states certify the election results and electors cast their ballots, both of which has already happened, Congress only has a ministerial role to count these ballots. There's no room for any reasonable dispute at this point. And the claim by Senator Hawley, Senator Cruz, some House Republicans, that there is a opportunity for Congress to reevaluate or overturn election results, that's just flat wrong. The Supreme Court rejected a similar constitutionally offensive suggestion from Texas, which claimed that it could file a petition with the court and ask it to exercise its original jurisdiction to second-guess other states' management of the presidential election. Last year, the Supreme Court rejected, in a unanimous decision, any suggestion that the authority of the states could, in fact, be second-guessed or sidetracked. Colorado and Washington won that case, which made clear the plenary authority that states have in managing a presidential election. And for anyone who believes in our Constitution and our commitment to federalism, you need to oppose this dangerous and unprincipled stunt. And I am grateful that many leaders from both parties have done so. And I'm disheartened by how many people have actually signed on to take part in this. Finally, as Nora mentioned after the call that we heard, it is just another reminder of the difficult position that public officials are being put in. And the president calling the Secretary of State of Georgia in a way that is an affront to election integrity and the rule of law is something we have to take seriously. We take this all very seriously in Colorado. We set up a system to have elections that are secure, that are safe, that are reliable, that are easy to be used. It's a model for the nation. I really give Georgia credit for adapting and making progress in their election. And I give credit to Georgia Secretary of State for being strong in supporting our democratic institutions and the rule of law. Our legal system has continued to hold, as has our commitment to democratic government. But we have to recognize these attacks have a cost. And we have to support leaders like the Secretary of State from Arizona and from Georgia, both of whom have faced considerable pressure, even death threats during this time. We're going to have work to do to rebuild the trust in our system after this is all over. I'm committed to that work, and I know those others on this call are as well. The important thing this week is to shut down this dangerous stunt and to stand for the rule of law and our democracy. Thank you.
Thanks very much, General Weiser. And now we will hear from Attorney General Josh Call of the great state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin is one of the states where the so-called objectors in Congress have announced they will be targeting possibly targeting the legitimate slates of electoral votes and the will of the voters. General Call.
Thank you to VPP for organizing this call. Thank you, Ambassador Eisen. It's a privilege to be here with such an outstanding panel, including not only Norm, but A.G. Weiser, who's been a great colleague. Secretary Hobbs, who's done such an outstanding job administering Arizona's election this year, and Governor Whitman, who has served the country in a number of capacities, including now working to protect the will of the voters with VPP. I just want to make a few points today about the election process this year and what we're seeing right now. The first is that it's really remarkable to have seen these now months of attacks from the president on the way that the process unfolded this year, because one of the things that is really notable about the election that we just had, and that really has not gotten the attention it deserves, is how smoothly the election process went. We had an election in Wisconsin in April of 2020, just after the pandemic really hit the U.S. And that election made national headlines because of the problems that happened. There were very few voting locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay. There were extremely long lines. There were concerns about people's safety. What happened in November was the polar opposite of that. We had a very smooth process in Wisconsin, just as states around the country had. There had been concerns before the election about potential voter intimidation. A number of AGs, including me, addressed those concerns, talked about them, and we didn't see major problems on election day. The process went very smoothly. We didn't see anything like the kind of reports about long lines that we often do with national elections. So what we saw was an extremely successful election. We also have a very secure process in Wisconsin, and if there are actual cases of voter fraud, they're taken very seriously. There's one case that has arisen in Wisconsin since the election, and there's a prosecution going on in that case. But again, the process overall is one that was very secure. We then had recounts in our two largest counties in Wisconsin. And what those recounts showed was that the margin between President Trump and President-elect Biden was virtually unchanged. There was a very small change as a result of that. And then we had litigation over the results of the election. We had litigation in state court and in federal court in Wisconsin. And uniformly, the challenges to the results of the election in Wisconsin failed. That includes, by the way, in one case, a challenge that was heard by a district court judge who was appointed by President Trump. And in that case, the Court of Appeals panel that heard the case, one of the judges was appointed by President Trump. Those challenges were rejected. It's also notable that the district court judge, Judge Ludwig, addressed one of the arguments that's being made by members of Congress for objecting to the results. He said he was considering the claims on the merits, and he was rejecting those claims. So the process has played out here. The Electoral College has met, and the Electoral College has voted. That is the process that the Constitution sets forward for determining the result of the election. There is no legitimate issue as to the legitimacy of these results. The second point I want to make is what we are seeing right now from the president is unquestionably an attempt to steal the election. That was frankly clear during the litigation that we saw. You heard from numerous legal commentators that the claims that the president was bringing were incredibly weak legally, and we have seen that play out with loss after loss by those who are challenging the results of the election. And, you know, what I submit was going on in those cases is that the president was not trying to win on legitimate legal theories, but rather was hoping to be installed, was hoping that judges would allow him to remain president despite the fact that he lost the election. And we heard that from the president himself in connection with the confirmation of Justice Barrett to the U.S. Supreme Court, where he talked about the importance of having a justice on the Supreme Court for election challenges specifically. And now we have confirmation of it as well from this recorded call with the Secretary of State in Georgia. We had known before that the president had been contacting people involved in administering elections, but now we have a recorded call that shows that he is attempting to get people in a position of authority to install him as the next president, even though he has lost this election. That is fundamentally un-American. It is fundamentally inconsistent with our Constitution, and it's fundamentally inconsistent with democracy. Now, Congress will be voting very soon here to certify the election, and I'm absolutely confident that Congress will certify the election. But it is important to talk about what people are voting on. What they're voting on ultimately is, do they want to affirm the democratically obtained results? Will they ratify what the people have chosen? Or will, as some members of Congress have suggested, will they vote to reject those results, even though there is no basis for doing so? And what that really is a vote on whether the members of Congress support our democracy. Do they support a system where the people choose our elected leaders, or instead, do they support a system that's more like Russia or other countries where, yes, the people vote, but it is politicians, elected leaders, who ultimately select who leads us? Fortunately, that effort is going to fail, but it is deeply concerning for the health of our democracy that so many members of Congress are attempting to vote against the will of the people here. So my hope is that ultimately members of Congress will rethink their opposition. But regardless, it is critical that those results be affirmed. That is what the law requires. And ultimately, Joe Biden will be inaugurated as president in a few weeks. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Governor Call, for those powerful words. And now, rather General Call, for those powerful words. And now we will hear from Governor Christine Todd Whitman, who is also one of the leaders on our VPP Bipartisan Advisory Board. Governor Whitman.
Thank you, Norm, very much, and thanks to VPP for setting up this call because it is so important, particularly now. The president's call that we've all heard about now to Rauschenberger that occurred over the weekend, I believe, moved this to a totally different level because of asking for a specific number of votes. This was no longer about just recounting ballots to make sure there were no mistakes. This was actually trying to steal the election by calling for a specific number of votes. And what's really dangerous about what's happening is undermining the people's confidence in our electoral system. This was, as you heard from these generals, this was a safe and accurate election in an incredibly challenging time with COVID rampant, running rampant through this country, and all of the previous pre-election comments by the president about how it was going to be stolen when he figured from polls and things that maybe he might not win, or at least he set up from the very beginning, should he not win, it was not going to be his fault. It was because it was stolen. And then we have some of his advisors saying, you can actually put off the inauguration, that that isn't a hard and fast date. I don't know if they've never looked at the Constitution or just choose to ignore it. There is no role now for the Congress or for the Vice President to do anything else but to certify this election. Theirs is really just a management procedure at the moment. They open the ballots. They open the electoral ballots that have been certified, that have been in every one of the contested states, been lawsuits that have been brought. Everyone has been defeated. The governors have signed this. It's usually just a pro forma thing that we did as governors to just say, yes, this is who won the election, and these are the electoral votes that they get because those were their pledged electors. And you move on from there. Obviously, that hasn't happened this time. And it is really concerning, to my mind, to see the number of Republicans in the House and the Senate who are going along with this, because it is a charade. It is not going to change anything. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will take the oath of office on the 20th of January. They are legitimately elected leaders. But by having so many Republicans in the House and the Senate choosing to go along with the president, they are undermining the ability of the new administration, potentially undermining the ability of the new administration to move as quickly and as smoothly as it would like to. If there is one thing we know about President-elect Biden, is he wants to bring people together. one of the biggest challenges he is going to face is restoring the public's confidence in the rule of law and help them understand the importance of our Constitution. But what is critical to remember is that come this Wednesday, the only role for the Vice President and for the Congress is to recognize what the states have already certified, that Joe Biden is the president-elect. And with that, I'll stop, because everyone else has made very powerful comments all to these points, and they're all legitimate.
And finally, we have Secretary of State Katie Hobbs from Arizona, colleague of Secretary Raffensperger, and she can reflect on that, but also representing another one of the states that is likely, indeed, that is almost certain to be challenged, because on Wednesday, as you'll read in our guide, they'll go in alphabetical order. There's been a recent litigation by Representative Gohmert involving the Arizona electors, and so another representative of a state where the legitimately democratically elected, properly certified slate of electors is likely to be attacked on Wednesday. Secretary Hobbs.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm honored to join this esteemed panel. I would say I'm happy to be here, but honestly, I can't believe we're having this discussion still 2 months after the election. I didn't think that in 2021 I would still be saying, I just want this election to be over. but here we are. And honestly, this election is one for the record books, saw record participation, historic highs across the country, as was the interest in the details of the civic process by Americans all over. I have full confidence in this election and the American people, and I can attest as a Secretary of State that across the country, there were not irregularities that should cause concern or alarm or doubt in the election results anywhere. And this confidence has been affirmed by the courts multiple times, both here in Arizona and in states across the country. And my sincerest concern about each of the legal actions that we've seen, as well as what we're hearing is going to be planned for Wednesday, is not that these folks are going to succeed in throwing out the votes of millions of Arizonans and Americans, because they will not succeed, but instead they're going to continue to create further discord and disillusion and further exploit divisions in our communities. And I can tell you, as someone who's receiving the brunt of a lot of this disillusion and discord, that is quite alarming and concerning to me. We are emerging from an election cycle that has further normalized vitriol and violence and allowed politicians to throw out the very principles on which our nation was founded, the power of we the people, when it no longer furthers their own pursuits. On Wednesday, a minority of members of Congress are apparently setting up a reemergence of all the baseless claims and lies. No credible evidence has been presented. Courts have tossed out every claim. And that is what makes what's going on right now so unprecedented. You can't just make stuff up, and that's what they're doing. And it is not normal or okay for anyone, not even the president, to call up a chief election official, no matter what their party, and ask them to change election results. And there should be no doubt that that is exactly what happened. And Secretary Raffensperger responded in a way that I hope any Secretary of State would have. As a fellow chief elections officer, I'm astounded by this, to say the least. But every American should also be outraged. Being upset with the election results does not come close to justifying this or any other of the actions that we are seeing in this post-election period. There will be another chance at the ballot in 4 years. That's how this works. Leaders of all parties must step up and say, this is not only unacceptable, but un-American. Enough is enough. This is likely the beginning of a lengthy debate about how to reclaim faith in our democratic institutions. And I look forward to those discussions with people of good intent and interest in rebuilding our faith in each other. And I look forward to seeing the results of this election reaffirmed on Wednesday in Congress, even if it takes an unnecessarily long number of hours to get there. The results are clear and will not change. Joe Biden will be the 46th president of the United States. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary Hobbs, and thank you to all of our panelists for those penetrating insights into what has been going on in and around the election and since, the profoundly disturbing events of recent days, the illegitimate attacks that we're going to see on the 6th of January. But the good news, thanks to current and former elected officials, leaders, volunteers of both parties, and the voters and the American people, courts and judges, the rule of law is holding, notwithstanding the attacks of the kind that we have seen from President Trump, who could not be shocked by that recording of the phone conversation. It not only is an insult to the voters of Georgia, of both parties, to the elected officials who worked so hard, but it raises profound questions. It seriously implicates federal criminal statutes. That includes those prohibiting election fraud, like 52 U.S.C. Section 20511, forbids depriving or defrauding the residents of a state of a fair and impartially conducted election process. 18 U.S.C. 241 and other election fraud statutes, as well as the federal extortion statutes, 18 U.S.C. 872 and 875, and analogous Georgia state crimes. Whether it'll be charged is another matter, but this is a very serious event that must be investigated. In terms of what is coming on Wednesday, I encourage everyone to take a close look at the guide itself. Just a couple of key points. The Electoral Count Act was enacted to deal with just this kind of electoral uncertainty, and it sets clear rules that govern the proceedings of the joint session and allow us to predict, not just with confidence, but with certainty, because we know a sufficient number of members in both the House and the Senate have said they'll follow the rules, that the efforts to strike down the will of American voters will fail. Think about how profoundly anti-democratic that is. As General Call said, in America, it's the voters who pick their elected officials, not the elected officials who choose who will run the country. That is the opposite of the American idea, and that is why we have the ECA, that is why we have the 12th Amendment of the Constitution, and although it will fail, it is a profoundly dangerous assault on our democracy by those who have been chosen by the American people to be its guardians, and we direct you to the guide for more. With that, I want to thank everyone. I want to thank everyone. Yes, go ahead.
Add one thing to what you said, because it's so true. But don't forget, they also swore on a Bible to uphold the Constitution. And that's where they really are stepping outside and being in dereliction of duty. They swore to uphold the Constitution against all of our enemies, foreign or domestic, and they are ignoring that.
Thank you, Governor Whitman. I'll just remind everyone that AG Weiser has a meeting and is dropping off the line, but we can connect the general with any reporters who have questions for him after the call, and we are open for questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. You may remove yourself from the queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, that is star and one to ask a question. We will pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. Our first question comes from Alina Aberson from Time Magazine. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for doing this call. My question is, there's been a lot of talk today about how we need to rework the system. What's going on right now is clearly involved fault lines in the laws governing the peaceful transfer of power. What kind of reform work needs to be done going forward to make sure that this doesn't happen again?
Okay, I'll open that up to our panel. I'll start with General Call. Do you have any thoughts on what kind of reforms, if any, are needed to prevent the kind of chaos that we've seen in this post-election season going forward, General?
Yeah, thanks for that question. I do have a few thoughts. I mean, first and foremost, as you know, Norm mentioned before, the rule of law is being upheld in these cases. We've seen a number of court cases, and the efforts to challenge the results of the election have uniformly failed. So ultimately, the process has worked, and it will work in this case. But I will say that there are some things that have been used here by the president and others to try to undermine the process. And I think that we can benefit from looking at what they've done and use that to fortify our system. One of the arguments that's been made is that, state legislators get to decide who's won elections in states. And although those elections have failed because in every state, the laws provide that the voters get to select the winners of elections, confirming that they're expressly providing in the Constitution that there is a right to vote, I think is a step we should take. I think it's time we have an amendment that provides that. I think most Americans assume that is in the Constitution, and it's certainly been established by case law, but expressly providing for it in the Constitution I think would be helpful. I think we should also pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act so that there is clearer protection for voting rights in statutory law. I also believe that other steps to strengthen our democracy will help deter these kinds of anti-democratic efforts in the future. So, for example, prohibiting partisan gerrymandering is the kind of step that I would like to see. So, generally speaking, efforts to promote democracy, to strengthen our democracy, I think are likely to deter these kinds of efforts in the future and will fortify our system if they recur.
Governor Whitman, you produced a report on some of the reforms that are needed. You helped lead an effort in that regard. Do you want to add anything to General Call?
Well, General Call, I think, thank you, Norm. And that what you're referring to is the task force that I co-chaired with Preet Bharara on the rule of law and democracy at the Brennan Center at NYU. And we came up with a number of suggestions that could be enacted to help strengthen the rule of law and to ensure that what we do is to institutionalize what we have considered normal behavior in the past. And partisan gerrymandering was one of the those suggestions. And then there are a number within just the executive branch itself, things that could apply to elections, such as the president and vice president should always have to release all their income tax returns. That doesn't speak directly to the question that you asked about what we're seeing today, but what we need to do is restore the public's confidence in the rule of law, and what is in that report outlines a number of steps where we can do that, such as saying that a special prosecutor could only be fired for cause. The same with inspector generals. And we have seen leading up to this election a number of attempts to undermine what those two offices have done in various states to try to ensure the sanctity of the vote. We need to make sure that we understand that these are offices that should be politically independent when they're undergoing these kinds of reviews. So I would urge you to take a look at that to see that those reports, there were two of them that we put out with that task force, to see some other things that could bolster what you've already heard.
Okay, we'll take the next question, please.
Our next question comes from Eric Larson from Bloomberg News. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello, this is Eric. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Great, thank you. My question is about the phone call and any investigation that could potentially be opened into it. How serious is the legal liability here for Trump, particularly any kind of type of criminal liability? How serious is it here? What can happen to the president?
I'll answer that one, and then if anyone else wants to chime in, they should feel free to do so. The liability here is quite serious. Federal law prohibits attempts to engage in election fraud, and it provides criminal penalties for such attempts. And as I outlined earlier, probably the most likely fit is 52 U.S.C. Section 205(1)(1). President can't spin or mischaracterize or lie about what happened on that call because we have the recording. In my view, as someone who's practiced criminal law for decades, that recording makes out a sufficient case and a more than sufficient case to open an investigation under Section 205(1)(1), possibly under other election fraud statutes such as 18 U.S.C. 241. And there are serious questions about whether the threats that the president can be heard making on that tape possible criminal investigation of Secretary Raffensperger and his counsel implicate other federal criminal statutes, such as the extortion laws, that's 18 U.S.C. 872 and 875. So it's a very, and there are comparable state criminal violations in Georgia as well. So it's a very serious matter, and it needs to be looked at. I won't predict whether charges ultimately will emerge. You never know what is going to happen as prosecutors weigh and balance. And that is very difficult to predict. But yes, this is quite serious. You had no less than the former Attorney General of the United States pointing to this exposure yesterday, as well as a wide array of other experts. Does anybody want to add anything? I should add two additional points. This is not something that the president can likely pardon himself out of, both because the Department of Justice's Office of Legal Counsel has opined that presidential self-pardons would not be effective. We know he's liberally dispensed pardons, but the Constitution would not allow it. Other experts agree with me, including Professor Larry Tribe of Harvard, that the fundamental principle underlying constitutional pardons is that no person can be a judge in their own case. And there's also state law exposure, which presidential pardons cannot touch. So that's another reason to believe that this is a serious matter that may very well get a close review. Secretary Hobbs, do you want to, we haven't given, I guess we'll give Secretary Hobbs the next question. I'll ask General Call if he wants to add anything to that.
Yeah, just briefly, Norm, I would add that if any candidate for office engaged in this kind of conduct in Wisconsin, there is no question that they would be investigated for potential criminal activity. And it would be irresponsible for the U.S. Department of Justice not to investigate this. I don't know Georgia laws, but I suspect that they have similar laws that prohibit this, and that an investigation there would be appropriate as well. I would note that this comes, not all that long after Secretary of State in Georgia made allegations that Lindsey Graham had also asked them to invalidate lawfully cast ballots. And, as Governor Whitman pointed out before, the president's point that he made in the call about how he needed a particular number of votes, that's an indication that this is not about any question about the merits of the work that the Secretary of State's office has been doing or any legal issue, but rather is about trying specifically to change the result. It is absolutely inappropriate for a candidate to be pressuring an election official to try to change the result in their favor. In fact, it is illegal to do that. And an investigation in these circumstances is not only appropriate, but really warranted here.
Secretary Hobbs, if you want to add anything, you should feel free. If not, we'll give you the next question.
No, I think you've covered it.
Okay, we'll take the next question.
Our next question comes from Christina Cassidy from the Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much. My question is this. As you all indicated, the outcome on Wednesday is likely not to change. And so my question is, what happens after that? There's certainly a large number of the American public who believe that this election was fraudulent, who believe the president's claims. Certainly you all receive the same public feedback I do every time I write a story about the president's claims. What can be done about that specifically? Can people be convinced that there was no fraud, widespread fraud, in this election? Thank you.
Secretary Hobbs, would your dealing with those voters of every party on a constant basis, would you like to reflect on what can be done to address that?
Sure. I think, and my experience regarding this issue might be a little bit jaded just because of what I've experienced here in my state. My biggest frustration has been that leaders of both parties have not been as vocal as they needed to be from the get-go to just dispel these outrageous conspiracy theories and, you know, claims of fraud without evidence. And I don't know if that had happened earlier and louder, if it would have made a difference, but I would have liked to at least see that. I think that there is a segment of this population who totally, absolutely, 100% believe that myself and other elected officials stole the election from Donald Trump, and they are never, ever, ever going to be convinced otherwise. It doesn't matter how much the courts refute their evidence, how much we refute their evidence, no matter what, they're not going to be convinced. I think there is a segment of this population who is a part of the attempts to overturn the election who know better, but they're getting some sort of gain out of taking the positions they're taking. And so I can't predict, you know, what their next move is going to be once things fail on Wednesday and Joe Biden is still the president-elect. But I can tell you from my experience, at every step of the way, the Republican Party here in Arizona continues to just rehash and rehash and rehash, and every time things seem to die down, you know, reattack me personally, which just riles everything up again. And they're definitely getting some traction and probably financial benefit and, you know, whatever else out of continuing to drag this out. And so, I mean, one of the things that I've said multiple times is that I am looking forward to having the conversations about how we rebuild the trust in our democratic institutions, including our election systems, with people of good intent, with people who want to do that. And I just think that this certain segment of the population isn't interested in doing that because it doesn't fulfill their objectives.
Thanks, Secretary Hobbs. And I know we have two more questions in the queue, so we're going to take those we'll take those both together, and then we'll endeavor to answer them both and let everyone get back to their busy news day of coverage before noon. So, operator, can we take the next two questions, please?
The first person, Michael Karlick from Colorado Politics, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thank you. We've heard phrases thrown out like stealing the election, violating oaths to the Constitution, Norm cited federal laws that could have been violated. What do you all think should be the consequence for lawmakers and for even the president for attempting to overturn the election results? Is there a legal remedy here?
Well, I'll pitch to Governor Whitman for a quick answer to that. The president's behavior is the culmination of years of disrespect for and assaults on the Constitution and the laws of the United States, and of repeated betrayal of his oath. And the American people have issued the ultimate judgment on that in repudiating that pattern, which I'll remind you, the assaults on the election began well before Election Day. And so we're a part of the pattern that the American people should judge. That's the ultimate judgment in a democracy on our leaders is at the ballot box. But when there are possible violations of criminal laws, as we have here with the president, and on the Saturday call, that should be looked at, as you've heard from the panelists, by federal and state officials. And in terms of the consequences for Congress, for members of Congress, let's see what happens on January 6th, and then we'll be in a position to judge whether there will be consequences, whether it's in terms of ethics complaints before the responsible bodies in those houses of Congress, legal ethics complaints to the extent that individuals are members of the bar, or other consequences. Governor, anything to add?
Well, not much to add to that, Norm, because I'm not a lawyer. But I would say that as an elected official who took that oath of office, I believe that there should be consequences for this. Now, you can say, okay, that's the ballot box, and it is. And that's where it needs to be finally decided and adjudicated. But in the interim, I think people need to be reminded about how outside the norm of what our democracy is these actions have been, and how important it is that we remember that, so that when it does come time to decide in 2 years relative to these elected officials, that that's part of their thinking. Are these people they can trust? Because they seem not to be, in the sense that they are willing to overlook the Constitution and the rule of law to get the result that they want, and that is just not our American democracy. So whether there are legal challenges brought by the various states' attorney generals or prosecutors, that's going to be up to the legal community. For the rest of us, we have the ballot box, but there is a responsibility not to let this die in the next 2 years, to remind people of how undermining this behavior is and how contrary to what we stand for as a nation this behavior is.
Okay, and I think we have one last question from Alexa at the Wall Street Journal.
Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I wanted to ask Secretary Hobbs if she had ever received a call similar to what the Georgia Secretary of State received on Saturday from the president or the president's advisors, asking her or her office to try to overturn the results there.
No, I did not. And I have not. I know there was earlier Senator Graham was tweeting that he had talked to election officials in multiple states and claimed he had talked to me, and that did not happen either.
Thanks, Alexa, and thanks, Secretary Hobbs. And we want to thank everyone for joining us for this call. We know we went a little long, but it's a packed news day. I want to remind everyone that VPP's benchmark polling has shown that state officials like those we've had on this call and the other state and local elected officials are highly trusted. And I guess this goes to our friend from Colorado's question. That notwithstanding specific allegations that are circulating and have done damage to the faith of some in our democracy who have fallen for President Trump's lies, that a supermajority of the American people continue to have faith, particularly in our state and local elected officials, in our courts and judges, and in our democracy. And in all the chaos that the president and his allies have caused, there is also a good news message, and it is the ultimate voter protection in the United States. That is our Constitution and our rule of law. And it is holding up against this furious assault, and it will hold up on Wednesday, as we explain in our guide in considerable detail, all of the crazy stunts you're going to see on Wednesday, exactly what's going to happen, and why they will fail. Thanks, everyone, for joining us, and we'll look forward to having you on our next VPP press call. Thank you.